Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. What a wild day it was today in sports, and we were all over it. Phil Jackson finally gets his pink slip from James Dolan. Chris Paul on the move to Houston, joining up with James Harden. And Miguel Montero ran the team bus right over Jake Arrieta and then got DFA'd for his efforts. Two excellent interviews, too. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a former NBAer and now part of the Big Three, and Cincinnati Red, Zach Cozart, who leads the NL shortstops in All-Star voting. All of that and takes 4 days, and Alvy will bring you the best of the best. In fact, Alvy, why don't we go ahead and do it right now? As I mentioned, a Woj bomb to start the day. Adrian Wojnarowski reports that the LA Clippers have reached an agreement on a trade to send Chris Paul to the Houston Rockets for a package which includes guards Pat Beverly and Lou Williams, forward Sam Decker, and a 2018 first-round pick. So according to this report, Chris Paul told the Clippers that he planned to sign with the Rockets in July in free agency unless they worked out a trade with Houston. So the Clippers do well to get that package instead of having him walk and get nothing in return. But in terms of that trade itself, forget the NBA offseason being more exciting than the NBA postseason. It's more exciting than any season of anything ever. First, there were reports. This story should have carried the morning, should have carried the day. First, there were reports that Phil Jackson was on the verge of being fired. And now we have a Hall of Famer traded before Phil can even get his walking papers. So this is better than anything. Better than The Sopranos. Better than Game of Thrones. Better than Breaking Bad. Better than every other TV show that anybody ever said was great. This is like the best thing ever. So now you've got the questions. He's on his way. So what's that mean to the Rockets? What's that mean to Chris Paul? What's that mean to James Harden? What's that mean to the LA Clippers? What's that mean to the balance of power in the West? Can Harden and Paul fit? Both these guys need to be on the ball. Can these guys play together? Well, Woj reports that the two of them discussed it at length, and not only do they believe that it can work, but they were determined to play together. So you have CP3, and you've got James Harden. Not bad. Not bad at all. It also takes CP3 from the Clippers, and it keeps him out of the hands of the San Antonio Spurs, which makes it pretty interesting. So where does that leave Houston? Is their roster now better than Golden State's? No, but it does bring them closer. As for Paul, makes you wonder about him, right? He could have got the Supermax deal if he stayed with the Clippers. Follow me here. Could have got $50 million more if he stayed there. Also, he was a part of the group for the players that negotiated that deal. So why would he leave that money on the table? Why would anybody leave $50 million on the table? Does he want to win that badly? Well, we'll never know because he doesn't need to leave the money on the table. The report also suggests that his bird rights go with him in that trade, meaning he can still sign a five-year, $205 million deal with the Rockets because he opted in. And it's a state with no income tax. So he can still get that max deal in a state with no income tax. Pretty damn good. As for the LA Clippers, the question for a number of years has been, will they break up the Big Three? And now you have your answer. They're broken. Now you wonder what's going to happen to Blake Griffin. Do you bring him back? Does he want to come back? Or do you let him walk or watch him walk and then blow that whole thing up right now? At this point, you may as well take a wrecking ball to it because the worst place to be is in the middle of the pack in the West. That gets you nothing. We're joined right now by Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Mahmoud, it's been a long time, my friend. Nice to have you on the show. How are you?
I won't complain. Nice to be back. How you doing?
Good, good, man. Great talking to you. Now, there's so many things that I do want to talk to you about, but why don't we start with Sunday when you were back on the court with the three-headed monsters in Brooklyn. How did it feel to be back out there?
Well, it felt great. Kind of like the preseason. You know, you spent a lot of time training in the summer, and then when you get back, you got to work the kinks and the rust off. But I think as the season progresses, we'll get into our groove a little bit more.
Yeah, but it's wonderful. I'm sorry, I was going to say, to fully appreciate what you're doing, though, I mean, it's worth remembering, although it's hard to believe watching you because you look great to me, but you are 48 now, so clearly you were working out and you were staying in shape. In fact, the other day you ran 15 hills, so what kind of preparation did you do for this league?
I mean, I've been doing the same thing since pretty much I've retired. I stay in the gym, so I didn't have to do a whole lot different. But the one thing I did was I would bring guys in, whether they're 6'5", 6'3", and we play a lot of one-on-one, a lot of two-on-two and three-on-three, and I make sure they hack me a little bit because today's game is a little different. And just to get used to that banging and that hand-checking again.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, my guest. Ice Cube said that, quote, he was my favorite player in speaking about you. So take me back. What was your first reaction when you first heard about the Big Three?
Well, you know, I was skeptical because you hear about a lot of different leagues here and there coming together. A guy that I'm close with came to me and he asked me once again. It was the second time, actually. He said, hey, man, would you be interested? I said, we'll find out more details about it. And then when I found out how everything was structured, the 14-second clock, you know, the hand checking, and you know, playing once a week, and I said, you know what, it sounds interesting. And they had a combine. Of course, you had to make it. And we're competitive. You know, by nature, we've been doing this most of our lives. And while there's still something left in the tank, I said, well, let me go see. And I knew pretty much most of these guys were going to be younger than myself. It's just always something to see. Okay, I want to see where I am in relation to the younger guys. So I went and took a chance, and they saw something in me, felt I could benefit. I was drafted, and here I am.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf joining us, two-time All-American out of LSU. Now, there are a number of moments that we could talk about because of some of the things that you did at Gulfport High and at LSU. They were legendary. In fact, as an example, there was this one time in high school when the coach had a deal where minutes would be shaved off of practice each consecutive free throw that was made. The story goes that one day you were the shooter and you made 283 in a row and practice was canceled. Is that story true, and what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, very much true. That was his routine for years. And actually it happened on more than one occasion. But that was the one that still stands today. And that particular day they just closed practice all together. And he would begin to just say, you know what, forget it, man. We're just gonna continue to practice if you're shooting free throws. Because we just wasted too much time looking at myself shoot, and sometimes other guys will get into a rhythm as well. So yeah, that's true.
All right, good. Now, you had some amazing moments. You had 51 on the Jazz, 32 in a win over the 72-win Bulls. You had 30 points and 20 assists against the Suns, and legend has it that Kevin Johnson told your agent back in the day, quote, there are three players in the NBA that you cannot guard. They're unguardable. It doesn't matter what you do. You can't do anything. We have different schemes to try and prevent them from doing certain things, but they cannot be stopped, end quote. And the three guys he was talking about were Jordan, Olajuwon, and you. So did you have that feeling of being unguardable? And if so, what was that like on the court?
Well, I mean, I was very confident in my ability to get where I wanted to get to and get my shot off, irrespective of the guy's height. But you never truly know how, you know, your peers think of you pretty much until your career is over with. And I've been hearing that a good fit, and it surprises me when I hear it. I mean, you go out with this attitude, look, I want to destroy. I want to dominate. I think every player does, but I never really knew that this many people felt that way, and it's just humbling, really, when you look back at it, that people really had this perception of me. I'm humbled by it.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, I'm sorry, joining us. He is a guard for the three-headed monsters of the Big Three League. He's joining us right now. You know, one of the comparisons also that comes up quite a bit is Steph Curry, and that Steph Curry reminds people of your game. What's your reaction when you hear that, and do you see a similarity?
I see similarities. I mean, he has different. I mean, he can shoot the long ball. He can shoot the mid range. He's crafty with the basketball. He can shoot from different angles. He's got a quick release. The man is phenomenal. I love his. I mean, he's look, man. He's phenomenal. I love to watch him. I'm just how I feel about it. I'm just humbled to be a part of the conversation. That's the answer I usually give, and that's the truth of it. But at the same time, this is his time. But we're always going to have comparisons. We can't escape that. I don't care who you are. But this is his time, and he's doing a wonderful job. And I enjoy. There's a few players that I just enjoy watching because they're the high level of skill, and it's just beautiful to see.
Clones, allow me to talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products. But what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, our guest. You know, another comparison that's made is to Colin Kaepernick, because 20 years before he took a knee during the national anthem, you took your own stance during the national anthem. How did that first come about for you?
I just began to read more. And through my reading, I became aware of certain things that prior to that I wasn't aware of, and I developed a conscience. And that was my own decision to just, I guess, kind of boycott the flag, not looking for any attention. And it just happened that someone noticed it, and they asked me a question. I spoke my conscience, and it went global. And, of course, you know, I'm going to stick by what I believe, you know, whatever the consequences are. One thing led to another. And that's how the story unfolded.
Then when the public did become aware of it, you received letters, death threats, hate mail, things like go back to Africa or simply bleep you. What kind of emotions did you feel when you would receive messages like those?
Yeah, I mean, it angers you because a lot of these people don't know you. They don't know the reasons behind why you did what you did. I mean, of course, the media says one thing, and what happened, I felt, was that, you know, my character was being assassinated. I was looked at as this renegade, this radical, this problem on the team. That was never the case. I got along with all of my teammates, and a lot of even veterans was upset about it. And I'm saying, look, this is really for you as well. I said, because how many of you go? And as politicians often say, well, they've given the ultimate sacrifice. But yet you come back and many of you are homeless. Many of you can't get proper medical care. This is not right for people who've given the ultimate sacrifice. This is not how you treat people like you. So, I mean, it was a broad position that I was taking. But, you know, not everybody could hear that. And they framed the story. And so it angers you because you see that your character is being assassinated. And at that time, there's only so much you can do. We didn't have social media back then the way it is now, where we can kind of control and get our story out there.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, my guest. So when you see the Colin Kaepernick right now is not signed with an NFL team, what do you make of that?
It doesn't surprise me. I anticipated. I said, even when it happened, that I won't be surprised if he doesn't get signed, because this is just, when it's all said and done, the way it works. You know, these type of things, and this is just my humble opinion, you hear a lot of guys, and I've said this before, a lot of guys are up on charges. It's easy to accept these guys back. But someone who is kind of reminds me of Noam Chomsky, the threat of a good example, that if someone is trying to, you know, encourage people to be socially conscious, religiously conscious, politically conscious, and it's away from maybe what mainstream wants, then this is kind of like, okay, this is unacceptable. So we have to make an example of this type of person that to discourage other people from wanting to do it. And so this is what I think is happening. So it doesn't surprise me. And I said before, too, that he didn't commit any criminal act, right? He just spoke his conscience. But yet what's done to him, I think, is criminal. Because, you know, people spend their life developing their skills. It's not like he can turn around and become this engineer, doctor, or lawyer. I don't know his educational background. But he spent his life doing this, and you're going to punish him just because. I would think that you would want this type of person. You know, the NFL, the NBA, they have programs. We care, right? The NBA cares and all of these things. But here's a man, he's sent food to Africa. He's meals on wheels. He's backing up what he's talking about. I would think this is the person that you want on your team. We're taught that, you know, if we see an injustice, to speak out against it. We talk, you know, we show Martin Luther King Jr. and all of these people, and we honor them for their stance, the Muhammad Ali. But in our day and time, when it happened, we show just the opposite. I think it's hypocrisy, and it's sad to see it happen, but it definitely doesn't surprise me.
You know, you mentioned Muhammad Ali. That's really interesting, because what about this? Muhammad Ali passes away, and there's one tribute after another about his courage to take a stand, yet when an active player takes a stand, the reaction is very different. Why do you think that is?
I think it's that way because Muhammad Ali, in the latter part of his life, he really lost his ability to articulate what it was that he wanted to articulate. When he was at the height of having a voice, he was still in so many ways, I think, shunned. But now that he's kind of, in a sense, you know, he can't really communicate, he's no use, and we didn't think that. It's like easy to accept him, right? So they're showing that, you know, we really, in a sense, we really don't honor this person. Because why? When it happens in our day and time, the same people are doing what a Muhammad Ali did, what a Tommy Lee Smith and John Carlos did. We, in a sense, condemn them. So it's, again, it's hypocritical.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, my guest. You know, you've referenced the phrase that straight roads don't make skillful drivers. Can you lay that out for me? What do you mean by that?
Meaning that life is a struggle, it's a challenge. And these challenges are meant to make you stronger, to make you wiser, to make you better. If you only are trying to, you know, to play it safe, it's like the old saying goes, geniuses are created in times of struggle, in times of crisis. It's those type of moments that brings out the best in people. So always being challenged, always pushing yourself, getting outside of that comfort zone, right? And not allowing people or yourself to keep yourself in a box. This is how you really develop and evolve, I think, as a human being, getting out of that box. So that's what I mean by that. Straight roads don't produce skillful drivers. You're not, if you're always trying to play it safe, right, you're never going to be great. You're always going to be mediocre. You got to take those, you know, those risks, those healthy risks and chances in life.
And finally, going forward, where does that leave us? As an example, over the course of the past year in particular, you've been speaking at colleges and high schools. When you meet with young people, what kinds of things do you see that give you hope?
You know, I see a lot of people that they're becoming more socially conscious, more politically conscious. They're becoming more courageous. They're networking. And they're not just sticking with their own ethnic groups. You know, this intersectionality of ideas and cultures are coming together. And through that, I think that they're coming up with, you know, tremendous ideas on how to change the world. And so I find hope in that. It's a new time. And now the kind of, I wouldn't call it fear, is that in this day and time, they're trying to make, in a sense, revolution seem fashionable, you know, because a lot of athletes came out and it's kind of like a little bit more acceptable now compared to the way it was then. But these are the things that give me hope. And there's more of a collectivism when I go to these college campuses and places, and it's not just individualistic, and it's not just about their race. You have white people, you have Jewish people, you have a lot of people that are really doing great things in Africa, and then you have the reverse of that as well. So, I mean, I think this is what it should be about.
Email.
And some of you also picked up on that mic drop. Hey, look, you got to admit, my takes were so fire, I had to drop the mic. In fact, my takes were so fire, I dropped both mics.
It's two for me.
You mean I didn't fool anybody with that? You mean you knew what was going on? At PingGolf12 tweets, moving along like your mic wasn't falling apart. Nothing phases you. What, you could hear that? That's how that sounded? That's the screw that came out of the mic. That's awesome. All right, just so you know, these are not from the sound archive. These are not Alvy's little sound effects. This is actually the sound of the microphone becoming unhinged and hitting the table, involving the Rockets and the Clippers and lots of different angles here. That's the screw coming out and the mic dropping. That's the first mic. Here is the second mic. 1-800-636-8686. Okay. That's the second mic. Y'all have no idea how much game I have. Y'all are not giving me nearly the credit that I deserve for staying in the fight, for not abandoning the fight, for having game. Come on now. Miguel Montero reportedly gone. Let me stress that. Reportedly gone.
Gone.
Designated for assignment per Buster Olney. So reportedly gone.
Gone.
But to me, that's not even the top story. The top story is me maintaining composure with every mic in this studio falling apart. Mic one. Mic two. There's plenty more mics here. I'll never run out of mics. Got one, two, three, four total. Two of them don't work. Might be time for me to get a new studio. You ever change a flat tire only to have another one get flat while you're changing the first one? That's me. I'm like Tiger Woods rolling on a couple of flat tires. Mic one. Mic two. I thought I was so smooth. I thought none of you even knew. Apparently, at Brandon Soder knew. He tweets, "What the hell just happened with the mic? Sounded like you fell off a freaking cliff. Stay strong, brother." Stephen Crowtown. Brother. Was that the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio falling apart or the Los Angeles Clippers? At Tim Ogonzo. Romy, you okay? Sounds like your chair broke and you slapped your tongue on the desk. Mic one, mic two. Y'all are sharp. I really thought I got away with that. Apparently fooling nobody. Zach Cozart is our guest. You were second among NL shortstops in the voting earlier this month. And at that time, Zach, you said you were surprised that you were ahead of guys like Addison Russell. Then in the latest announcement, you are the leading vote getter among NL shortstops. So what's it like to see your name on top of that list?
Man, it's surprising and it's awesome. I knew the Cincinnati fans, they would vote hard, but we're such a small market. I'm competing against guys like Corey Seager in LA, Addison Russell, Chicago. So, you usually see those big market teams, get all the votes. So it's pretty cool to see the fans outside of Cincy give me some love.
Now, when you went on the DL, you led all shortstops in average, hits, triples, extra base hits, total bases. The list goes on. I could argue that you're the best shortstop in the National League who has yet to make an All-Star game. So what would it mean for you to play in an All-Star game?
Man, that would be the best. When you talk about individual achievement, that's probably number one. You want to be an All-Star. You want to be recognized for all the hard work you put in. I had a bad knee injury a couple years ago, and I've worked my way back, and it would just be cool to be recognized, as being in a small market team and being able to make that team. That'd be, really cool for me for sure.
Zach Cozart joining us. You made it back from the knee injury, and you're currently dealing with a quad injury the last couple of days. The expectation is that you'll be playing back today. How does that quad feel, and is that still the plan?
The plan got pushed back a couple days, but it's just it's one of those things to where, kind of a rule of thumb with us here is you say you're good, you get an extra couple days. So, I feel way better. I've been running bases, doing everything baseball-wise. Now it's just a couple more days and I'll be back.
Got it. All right, one of the things you worked on this season was being more patient at the plate, and I've heard you talk about Joey Votto and how he's been something of an inspiration to you in that regard. What have you taken away from watching him?
He's the best, in my opinion, all-around hitter. He just – the number one thing is the guy works. He's here all the time, working on his craft, trying to get better every day. And for a guy like him that's been the MVP, that everybody knows how great he is, for a guy like him to keep working hard and wanting to get better, makes me want to get better. And so I've played with him my whole career, so I try to take things that he does and kind of implement them in my, routine and everything. And the play discipline, obviously he's the best at it. And, I kind of wanted to up my game in that aspect this year.
There's so much you can learn from somebody like that. And then there's another story involving him that I want to get into. About a mile away from the team's spring training facility in Arizona, there's a donkey farm. You know where I'm going with that? You're a big fan of donkeys. Zach, I got to start right there. What is it about donkeys? What do you like about donkeys?
Man, I don't know. I take my son and my wife goes with us and we feed the donkeys, like you said, by our spring training facility. So it's just one of those things. We go as a family. There's a donkey farmer outside of Nashville too, where I go and we'll feed them. But I was just talking with Joey about it, saying, "Hey, I fed the donkeys or whatever," and he's like, "Hey, you know, you make the All-Star team, I'm going to get you a donkey. So it kind of started off as just a funny joke, and now we're in the position to where, man, knowing Joey, there's going to be a donkey showing up here at some point. So it's pretty funny that it's taken off like that.
All right, see, I was going to say, was he joking or did he really mean it? It sounds like he really means it. So do you have a name picked out for this donkey, and where would you keep the donkey?
Man, I don't have a name. I've already had multiple people here in Cincinnati say, hey, you know, if this really happens, I got a place that we'll keep it during the season, and then so to give you some time to figure out what you want to do. So I haven't even thought that far ahead, but, you know, knowing Joey, that donkey's going to be here for sure.
Zach, how's the family feel about that? Are they all in?
No, the wife's not all in. My son, he'll love it, but the wife's not all in. You know, I don't live on a bunch of land, so that's problem number one. But this might force us to start looking for that, so that's not too bad of an idea.
My man, it's a good problem to have. Zach Cozart joining us, because you're going to get that donkey. Knowing Joey Votto, and he's a man of his word, he will deliver, and you're going to have to figure out what to do with the animal. Now, Devin Mesoraco said, quote, I played with Zach for 10 years. I see the way he goes about his business. He's the ultimate pro. He plays hurt. He treats everybody with respect. That's the guy you want to do well. You really cheer for him, end quote. So you talked about Joey Votto. What's it mean for you to hear somebody that you play with talk about you in such a regard? And then where did that approach to the game come from?
Yeah, that you know, I feel like as players, you obviously want to do good on the field. But, you know, the relationships you have in the clubhouse and, you know, throughout baseball, I think that's the stuff that people really remember. And so that means a lot. I pride myself on trying to be out there every day, even though I'm on the DL now, unfortunately. But playing through pain, not showing pain. I foul a ball off my leg. I don't want to show pain. I just want to get back in the box and get it going. And that's the stuff, you know, when I first came up, I played with Scott Rowland and Miguel Cairo, and they kind of instilled that in me. They were like, hey, you know, They said it in a little more vulgar way, but, you know, don't show pain. And so I was like, all right, I'll never. So I didn't want Scotty Ballgame to be calling me a pansy on the field. So I was that's just kind of what they ingrained in me. And it's kind of taken off from there that, you know, to this day, you know, I always try to be out there and play through whatever I can.
Scotty Ballgame's great, you know, because the media wouldn't ordinarily know about that guy or what he was about or what made him go. Talk about that nickname spot. Give me the sense of Scotty Ballgame. What was he like? Where did the nickname come from? What was he like to share a clubhouse with?
You know, he was amazing. He was quiet, but, you know, I just observed him and watched him, how he had a routine defensively and in the cage, and the way he played the game. And, you know, he wasn't all about himself. He was all about, you know, trying to get the team to win and being out there is you know, every day as much as he could, even at the end of his career. So that's something that, like I said, to this day that I look back on and I try to be like that because of what I saw in him and, you know, how much it meant to me as a young guy to see a guy like that keep playing hard and be out there every day. It kind of just stuck with me.
Washington 7, Chicago nothing, Nats 7, Cubs nothing. But that's not the final score. The final score was 6-1. Nats 7, Cubs nothing, was the final score in stolen bases. The Nats attempted 7 stolen bases, and the Cubs caught them 0 times.
Arrieta sets. Turner's running. The pitch is outside. Throw by Montero on a hop is too late. And now the pitch. Runner goes. Pitch inside. Corner, a called strike and no throw. Uncontested steal of third.
Turner not running. The pitch is low. Now it's a delayed steal, and he's got it easily. The old shuffle, shuffle go. Montero didn't throw. Runner goes. Arrieta deals. And the pitch is inside. No throw. Delivers a 1-0 with the runner going. Swing and a miss. The throw by Montero. Feet first slide. Rendon. Safe the call. And the pitch is taken for a ball and a pump fake by Montero. No throw. There goes Taylor for third. The pitch is low. The throw down goes into left field. The Nationals have stolen 7 bases in the game. They are running wild here at Nationals Park.
WJFK. That's incredible. I mean, that's not just bad. That's terrible. 7 stolen bases and nobody caught in a 9-inning game? Actually, it's worse than that. 7 stolen bases in 4 innings. And Trey Turner had 4 of those on his own, and on 3 of them, the Cubs did not even bother to throw down. So let me recap that quickly. In the first, Turner had an infield single, stole second, stole third, scored on another infield hit. In the third, he walked, stole second, stole third, scored on an error. So he effectively turned an infield hit and a walk into a pair of triples. Was that a major league game or a little league game? And based on what he said after the game, the only thing that stopped him from continuing to run was the code and the fact that the Nats had a 5-run lead when he got on base in the eighth. Otherwise, he probably would have been shattering the MLB record for stolen bases in a single game. So, is that a great night for Turner or a terrible night for the Cubs? And the answer is both. Just don't be looking to place the blame on Chicago catcher Miguel Montero. Now, this is where it gets really good. It was already good that they were 7-for-7 on this guy, but this is where it gets good. Do not blame Montero. He's not having any of that. I mean, sure, opposing runners are 31-for-31 in stolen base attempts against Montero this year. Not a single runner has been caught, not even one. Not a guy getting a bad lead. Not a guy stumbling in the base path. Not a guy leaning. Every single guy has been successful. And yes, his average time to second base is the second worst among MLB catchers. Think about that. Runners are 31-for-31 on this guy. What an incredible streak. What an amazing stat. In fact, I'd put that streak right up there with DiMaggio's hitting streak, Ripken's consecutive game streak. Hell, Johnny Vandermeer's back-to-back no-hitters. Yeah, like you threw consecutive no-hitters.
Please.
I allowed 31 straight stolen bases. But to hear him tell it, it's not on him. In fact, Montero was not in the mood to own any of it last night. Instead, he was gassing up a Greyhound and running it right over his starting pitcher, Jake Arrieta. Quote, go.
You really suck because, you know, like the stolen bases go with me. And when you really look at it, the pitcher doesn't give me any time. So it's just like, yeah, okay, Miggy can throw nobody out. Yeah, but my pitchers don't hold anybody on it. So it's tough because it doesn't matter how much work I put on and when I don't play it on full work, you know, throwing and everything, because if I don't get a chance to throw it, I mean, that's the reason why they were running left and right today, because they know he was slow to the plate. Simple as that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a shame that, you know, like, it's my fault because I didn't throw anybody out. Always go to the catcher, and I'm the bad guy there, you know? So, he, like I say, really, it really sucked. But it's what it is, and got to take it full responsibility. And on the other hand, I would like a little help.
You got to take responsibility, man. You gassed up that Greyhound bus, and you ran right over your starting pitcher and backed over him. That is fire. Friendly fire. Quote, the reason they were running left and right today is because they, Arrieta, were slow to the plate. Simple as that. It's a shame it's my fault because I didn't throw anyone out. He continued, quote, it really sucked because the stolen bases go on me. But when you really look at it, the pitcher doesn't give me any time. So yeah, Miggy can't throw anyone out, but my pitchers don't hold anyone on. End quote. That is awesome. He's lighting up his pitcher the way the Nats lit up the base pass. Not only is it not my fault, but it sucks because I get stuck with the bad stats. Not only is he pointing the finger at a teammate, he's also publicly sweating his own stats. I love that. And if you think Montero is pissed, you're right. Quote, it was a couple of times I didn't even try to throw because it was no time. It was no chance to throw nobody out. So why am I even going to make a throw? It really hurt me. He hurt me. I feel like I can still throw, like I got a good arm. My arm feels great. I just try to be quicker. I try to be perfect and make those two together. It's hard to do. That's what I just said. I need to be perfect to throw anybody out because my pitchers don't hold anybody on. Not just it was a bad night and some bad things happened, but rather my starting pitcher, quote, really hurt me. He hurt me. Like I said, straight friendly fire. Locker to locker in the clubhouse. And the guy's right. And he's wrong. Like when people say Miggy can't throw anyone out, they're right. They're right. He hasn't thrown anybody out this year. Literally not one guy. So, quote, when people say Miggy can't throw anyone out, they're right when they say that. However, he's right when he talks about Arrieta because he is super slow to the plate. Trey Turner said, quote, I don't pay attention to the catcher too much. More so the pitcher. I knew that Arrieta was slower to the plate, so I just wanted to be aggressive and make sure I was taking good chances, end quote. Then his own manager, Joe Maddon, said something similar. He said, quote, it's about time to the plate. He's a little bit slow. It's something he works on. There are times he's quicker and better to work with. The best anecdote is to keep the guy off the base, end quote. Yeah, that's something, right? If you walk six guys and you're that slow to the plate, guys are going to run on you. In the meantime, Montero has been DFA, designated for assignment, which is too bad, but I understand it. Number one, easier to get rid of Montero than Arrieta. However, that's not going to make Arrieta any faster to the plate. Also, this is not the first time that Montero has caused some controversy. You might recall he was critical of Maddon after they won the World Series. So this guy, all this together makes Montero my favorite Cub. He's my favorite Cub, or he was. The game is going to be worse without him. How often do you get a player taking a run at a teammate like that or bashing his manager after they win the World Series for the first time in 400 years? It's too bad. We are talking about a guy who also told a local radio station the day after winning it all that he was bent over playing time. Quote, it was a different emotion because I didn't get a chance to play. I was a little disappointed, to be honest. All right, so you got a guy pointing the finger at the starting pitcher when seven guys stole successfully on him, and a guy complaining over his playing time after winning the World Series. So as you might imagine, if somebody had to go, it was going to be that guy, which is too bad. He is my favorite Cub, or he was. SVP, and only then is it truly official. We go to the defending champ, the Laguna Beach Bully, Leff. Leff, what's up, champ?
Jimmy, RSVP, reserve, smack off, victory party, July 28th, Jimmy. Well, I had to move a few things around to get freed up. It's sounding like Brad and Corona moved a few things around to get tied up. A scheduling conflict. Really, the only conflict I had with Brad and Corona's high-pitched voice calls is if I should respond or War Lady clones. And Brad, when I said time to die last year, I didn't mean it literally, bro. Romy, I cut your interview with Caleb in Green Bay a couple segments ago about that three-man league, but how come you kept calling him stock food and drool aloof? Anyways, I got some questions for this thing. Do these games start with a traditional tip-off, or is it a shotgun start with the sounds of random gunfire? And do they keep the courts lit for the night games with the headlights from the players' cars? And Romy, after looking at these rosters, I assume most had to take PTO from their day jobs to participate, but who sponsors this thing, the players' alimony and other wage garnishments? I mean, I need to know. And, Romy, now the NFL is sponsoring a flag football league? I mean, what's next? Pele headlining a foosball-friendly? Dale Earnhardt Jr. riding in a soapbox derby? Chael Sonnen entering a smack talk contest? Romy, I saw Chael's pre-fight weigh-in over the weekend. And, Chael, sweet dad bod, bro. I mean, was your training regimen for this thing patching drywall and mowing the lawn? I mean, was this fight put on by Bellator or the Belly Tour? I mean, for God's sakes, Chael, have a take and suck in. Anyways, Romy, can't wait for July 28th when I make Chael kish my rings. Clean up on Chael 4.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. As always, go ahead and do what you do. Trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow. We will do it once again. See you then.